Welcome to A Canadian Investing in the U.S., a podcast and YouTube channel focused on Canadians buying real estate with host Glenn Sutherland.
Welcome to a new episode of A Canadian Investing in the U.S. with Glenn Sutherland. This week, my guest is Tom Moffitt. Maybe we'll start. I'm going to mention that he has been on this podcast before, episode 243, if you want to go back and find it. He's talking about Indianapolis investing, and this week we're going to go on a different tangent altogether. But Tom, you want to give everyone a bit of an intro to yourself, and then we'll get into it?
Yeah, absolutely, Glenn. Thanks for having me back. Pumped to be on the show again. So yeah, the last episode we talked about my property in Indy, and this one's going to be a bit different. And you know, you reached out and we had a couple ideas back and forth, but I think for today it'd be really helpful for your audience to for us to go through the tips and tricks on how to access equity from your Canadian mortgage and the do's and don'ts of that and why it might be beneficial to do that for your first couple properties in the States.
It's great. Maybe let's give everyone a bit of background. Who is Tom Moffitt?
Yeah. Where do I start? Okay. Basically, mortgage broker here in Ontario. Dove into real estate investing at an earlier age in Canada and then started venturing my way out to the States after discovering your podcast, which is a great wealth of knowledge for people. So thank you. And since then, I took your course and took action from that course, bought my first property in the States. And I only currently have the one property because the mortgage business started taking off pretty good over here on my end. So I just wanted to focus on one thing at a time. And I always listen to your podcast and always want to jump back in, but I know I can't do both at once. So as of right now, the U.S. investing is on hold, but it's definitely something for me to veer back into in the future.
Awesome. It just got me thinking, right? Like, I actually know the answer to this before I ask it, but I'm going to ask anyway. But why not go get like a license in the U.S. and be able to do both sides?
I've thought about it and it's still a thought for us, but I think we just really want to get to a certain place where we're content with where we are in Canada and then venture out there. Because for us, we call it, like, when I say us, my business partner and I, we call it our shiny object syndrome. Like, we have all these great ideas and we want to expand and do all these cool things. But we found that once we start doing that, it divides our attention and then we can't do the one thing really, really well.
No, I get that too. Cause even the more things I take on, I have to give something up. Right. Cause
exactly.
Otherwise I'm not going to be focused.
You add in kids in the mix and there you go.
You know, like, you're a mortgage broker, so you're specialized in this sort of thing. Honestly, the most common thing I hear, because a lot of people have a ton of equity in their property and they want to see how they can make money with that. They want to see how they can, you know, invest in properties in Canada or how to invest in properties in the U.S., wherever they're going with it. You know, maybe let's just go into that a little bit, what they have for options. Maybe we have to start back further than that. Maybe I'll let you start this and I'll just throw questions at you.
Yeah, sounds good. So, I mean, this applies, like, going forward in this episode, it'll apply to anyone that has a mortgage and has equity in their home, or even someone that doesn't have one, but they're maybe about to buy a home in the future. Having, like, the stuff that we're about to talk about today and having you set up for your future mortgage or optimizing your current one will be beneficial for your journey in investing in the States. Because when it comes down to accessing equity in your home, you really have three options. Two options are good options. The third option isn't really the best option. And so you have the home equity line of credit. That's your first option. Second option is to do a straight up refinance. And the third option is to get a second mortgage, which I would not recommend because it's more costly and I wouldn't use that money to invest in the States. So I guess from here, we can kind of dive into the pros and cons of each one, HELOC versus refinance.
Yeah, sure. And even, well, actually, I'll ask questions as we go, but we'll start off with like a HELOC and then maybe I'll ask questions to start. Well, you know what? First question is, what is a HELOC? Let's start from
there. HELOC is a home equity line of credit. So to put it very simply, it's a line of credit, but it's secured against your home. So the benefit of that is you have a lower interest rate. And if you have the proper HELOC, that growing on autopilot in the background as you pay down the mortgage. So as you get equity in your home, you pay down your mortgage, your HELOC is going to grow, and that could be your main vehicle to invest in the States, whether you're doing some flips, fix and flip loans, or fix and flip properties, or whether you're doing a BRRRR, whatever your strategy is, you can use this as your vehicle over here.
Yeah. And it's really common to use this, especially to get started. Sometimes it's easier than getting a mortgage in the States on your first one. It's easy as you get more experience. It shows, like in the US, it shows that you can get lower interest rates and higher leverage. Yep. So off the start, your terms aren't that great, but if you can use this, one problem I had when I was doing this was that I was getting paid in the US dollars and I had to pay my mortgage in Canada. Maybe I'll give one tip. One tip is to don't use all of your money in the US. So you can, I used to bring money back in chunks to pay my line of credit or my equity line of credit. Just to do this, right? Maybe this will be a question. So if people were doing a line of credit to go invest in the US, could they write this interest off like they could on a mortgage?
So this, I will direct this to an accountant because I'm not an accountant. So I'm not going to say yes or no, but from my experience, yes, you can. Yeah. Well, I just said yes, but you know what I mean? Go confirm this with your accountant. I'm not one, but as long as you segregate it and you can show proof of what that was for, then yeah, typically you can.
I don't know if people have done this before, or maybe I'm just a crazy person, but I remember at one point I went and got a home equity line of credit in off against my house in Cambridge where I used to live. And the way I set it up was I got a separate lines of credit for each property. So I'd be like, hey, I need a $80,000 line of credit to go buy this property. And so I'd get a line of credit set up, which means an extra appraisal each time, right? To do this. But then I had, I could sort of gauge it to like, that's for this property. And whenever I got my mortgage statement, it had a certain amount of interest that I'd paid. And then I'd send that to, depending on how you're doing this, writing off through Canada or US, but I send it to my CPA. And I leave a lot of this stuff, like, especially if you start doing complicated, like, just like you said, get an accountant or CPA.
Exactly. And things change, right? And there's a lot of, it is black and white, but there's also a lot of gray area that you need to confirm with your accountant. So the only thing I could recommend with that is just keep everything segregated, neat, tidy, organized, like you mentioned, and then just explain to your accountant what you have and what you're trying to write off, and they'll tell you whether you can or not. So don't take my word for it. Definitely ask your accountant on that. And to add on to that too, with the Canadian mortgages, with the big five banks, you have the ability to have those segregated line of credits and term portions. So if you think of your mortgage, if you're going through a big five bank and it's a collateral mortgage, you have this one big entity that's your mortgage, and you can segregate that into different components, which is what you mentioned.
That's what
there.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's beneficial too, because let's just say you get your new mortgage and you buy your home and you have 20% down. If you set it up properly to begin with, and you have what's called automatic limit increase for your line of credit, that means as you pay down the mortgage, your line of credit is going to increase at the same time. And then once you have that available limit on your home, that's when you can start playing with the different components.
Yeah. And what I like about the ones in Canada too, like compared to doing this in the US, is it's almost like cash. Like you could write a check right from that account. You could do a wire from that account and send your money to the US. I found that when you do these in the US, it's not as easy. You have to get approval to go spend your own money, which seems insane because I'm used to the Canadian side. But anyway, totally different. So I'm going to give you a question again. So say you had a house of $1 million, right? And you had a mortgage of $500,000. How much of this do you think you could pull out? I'm trying to get some nice even numbers. Like they're not going to let you pull out the other $500,000, right? There's going to be some limits of how much you have to keep in here.
Yeah. So general rule of thumb is you can pull out to 80% of your property value. And that has to be in combination with your mortgage and line of credit. So let's just say you have that mortgage amount of 500, your property value is $1 million. Then you can pull out up to 300,000 for that line of credit, or you can have that as that other mortgage component.
That makes sense. Cause otherwise you got to keep that as a down payment, because if you go below that, then you're into CMHC, right? So you're.
Yeah. And you can't do that for the refi. It's got to stop at the 80% LTV anyways. I was going to add something to that. But the cool part is, let's say you buy your home for $1 million and then up, there's a way to
You
register
just
the
lagged
collateral.
there for a second. What did you
Oh,
say?
shit.
If you bought your house for a mil?
So the really cool thing is, if in that scenario, if you buy your home for a mil, and then in a year from now, your property value has gone up, whether you've forced that appreciation or whether it's happened naturally, then you can go back to the bank. And as long as you have your collateral charge set to a higher amount when you first got your mortgage, you can go back to them, order an appraisal, and then register the mortgage amount up to 80% of that collateral charge that you first set, as long as your house appraises for that amount. So I know that's a lot, but if I go back and I give you the example of a mil, if you register the collateral charge when you first get that to 1,250,000, which is the max you can go up to 125% of the property value, and you can go back to the bank, get an appraisal. If your appraisal comes in and your value of your home is 1.25, then you can take up to 80% of that value without restructuring, paying a penalty, and all of that stuff.
That's awesome, right? And we touched on this before. If you're going to go buy boats and stuff with this line of credit, keep it separate, right? Because otherwise you're going to mess up everything for your thing. Another note, because I used to do this all the time. Like, this was my like bread and butter, how I started all this. Which means it's a great way to start. But if you're going to do this and then you want to quit your job, like, hey, things are going well, do this all beforehand.
And definitely don't quit your job during the process of getting your mortgage, because it's not going
Oh,
to
no,
help.
or buy a vehicle or
Anything that's going to add debt to your plate, so any monthly debt, whether it's a car payment, line of credit debt, credit card, doing any of those things during the process before you start, it's going to hinder your application, your approval amount. And of course, if you quit your job either during or before you get, and that could also hurt you as well.
that's a great tip. Anything else about lines of credit, I think, or home equity lines of credit? Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I just wanted to let you know that I've created a new coaching program. I believe the new coaching program has way more value than any of the programs that have even existed in the past. What we've done is pre-recorded all the lessons so that you can work through it at your own pace, which is pretty cool. And then we're going to meet up on a regular basis to answer the questions, do deal analysis, and actually spend our time together working on things instead of spending our time learning things. I think this will make a seamless transition to buying in the United States and will help you solve a lot of your problems. If this is of interest to you, go to glensutherland.com/coaching. I hope to help you guys invest in the United States, and I hope we provide as much value as possible. Back to the podcast.
The only thing I would say to that is, if you're going to, I would really think carefully as to what you're using those funds for. So if it's a temporary thing, like using my example for Indy, I use my line of credit to fund that. And I knew 6 months later I was going to be refinancing, because, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the US minimum amount of time required to refi a purchase is 6 months. Is it still that?
It is still that, but it does vary. There are some lenders, like, like 2 years ago when everything was going amazing and, no one really cared what was going on, they would let you do it. Some of them will let you do it on day one. But I always say at least wait 6 months, because even if you did it back then, the interest rates were going to be so high compared to the 6 month rate.
I had a hard time when I got mine. I had a hard time getting anyone on board. And I know, like with the US, it fluctuates throughout the year, right? So what I would recommend is, if you're going to use your HELOC and you know you're going to be paying that out once you refi the property in the near future, then a HELOC can be a great product for you. But if it's going to be long-term debt, then I would recommend converting that to a mortgage component. So you can start out with the line of credit, and then you can, which is going to be lower on that.
It's converted. It makes a lot of sense. But because, yeah, if you're going to do this long term, you got to have to actually factor that into, like, your, because in your underwriting for buying this property, you need to make sure that it has both mortgages in there, because it doesn't make sense to be making money on the US and losing money in Canada. It has to, together, has to still make money. Otherwise, you're like, what are we doing this for, right?
Yeah, and that's what I did. I was comparing it to the fix and flip loan, and all of the fees associated with that just didn't make sense. And it made more sense for me to fund it on the line of credit. And my plan was, like, eventually, as I scaled and I had enough property, the States, then I would use that money and the equity in those homes to just continue on there and not really use my Canadian mortgages or my Canadian assets, because the conversion rate obviously isn't the greatest.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yep, I agree. What were the other ones? So you had a line, home equity line of credit.
Yeah, and the other one is just a straight up refinance. So it's a similar process if you're going to start from scratch and want to access equity in your home. Only a refinance is you're completely restructuring your mortgage to access the equity. So the downside to this is if you break your mortgage, you're going to be paying a penalty, and penalties can vary depending on the mortgage amount, the length of time you have left on your term, and whether you have a fixed or variable rate, and whether you're with a Canadian bank or a monoline lender.
So wait, let's slow down there. What's a monoline lender?
Monoline lender is biggest misconception people have is they think monoline lenders are B lenders, which they are, but they're also A lenders. So maybe you've heard of First National, MCAP, CMLS. These are all institutes, financial institutes that are just dealing mortgages only. They don't have bank accounts or checking accounts or credit cards. They just give you a mortgage. They're really good at it. They have all the great features. The downside to monoline lenders is most of them don't have line of credit features within their mortgage, but the penalty is lower. So,
but if you were going to go with, say, a monoline lender, could you then, you know, walk into one of the big five and get them to put the line of credit on? Would they be open to that, or they probably want to have to hold it?
So, general rule of thumb is lenders don't like to have another lender behind them, but there are some in the channel that will be willing to do that. There's only a few that would, but you can, yeah, if you access those lenders, if you're curious about what they are, reach out to me, but they will put a standalone HELOC behind your mortgage.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably isn't the best idea, or probably going to be like,
it can. So if you go that route, the only problem is it's not going to grow as you pay down the mortgage. So let's say you get that line of credit for 50K. It's a standalone 50K. Yeah. That's the downside to it. But the upside is you're avoiding the refinance and paying a penalty.
Yeah. But it would be more like just like a line of credit then at that point, where you usually just set that up and it has a flat balance available, rather than like a home equity line of credit. But you'd have a better interest rate, ideally, by having it in the second position.
So it still is a secure line of credit, a home equity line of credit. It still is a HELOC, only it's just separate from your first mortgage. It's a standalone. So it's still the same rate. The only downside is it doesn't grow.
Okay. And then there's like some banks where you can do like your actual mortgage, like the first mortgage as a line of credit.
Yeah.
Would we suggest using that for doing this investing, or would that just get muddy?
So if you just want, like, let's say you're free and clear on your home, or you're buying a home and you just have a lot of money and you want to buy it outright, then yeah, you can just set up, instead of a mortgage, you can just set up a line of credit. The drawback is you can't have the line of credit go past 65% of the home value. So I know I mentioned before 80% as a total, but that's including your mortgage. If you just want a line of credit, it can't go past 65% of the property value. But yes, you can do that. And back to what I was saying before, I wouldn't recommend it if it's going to be long-term debt.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just because you want to have an exit. But in all honesty, with most of this real estate investing, I would say that you probably want to have an exit anyway. Even if it's getting into an American mortgage or getting into something else, like ideally you don't want to hold this forever on your own principal residence, because for American financing you could get non-recourse, whereas you're taking all the recourse for the American properties by putting it on your Canadian side long term.
That's why I would say, like, this is maybe a strategy for your first couple, and I wouldn't really do it long term. And then if you had even rental properties here in Canada, you can still set up a mortgage where you have that line of credit as well, so you can have it on rental properties. So you can just set yourself up properly, even if you don't plan on using it, at least you know you have it for situations. Because let's say you have five properties here and you have this line of credit on each growing as the tenant's paying down the mortgage, you have access to essentially this emergency fund if you need it.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea for too for the rental properties, right? Because then that would be even easier to write off because you might be able to do it against that
Yeah.
property instead of against an American properties. I don't know. It's like you said, talk to the CPA. It might be figuring out what works the best for them. And then I think talk to a CPA, talk to Tom, get them to look at maybe I'm giving you extra work, but get them to look at what you have and see if there's actually room to even put these on.
Yeah.
Because even with the calculations you just kind of gave us, gives you a kind of an idea where if you don't have 80% paid off or much more than 80, well, it's not going to even make any sense.
Yeah. Like if you just bought a property with 5% down, you're not going to have the option to do this. But if you bought a property even 2, 3 years ago, there could be a chance that, like with 20% down, then you could have a chance to access that equity. And also, property values have gone down over the last year or so. So, that could hurt the appraised value as well. But the only downside to it is if you go through the process and the appraised value comes in lower, then you're just out the appraisal fee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, these are some amazing tips because it is the way I got started. Tom's situation is a great way to use it to hit that seasoning period to get the best rates. Like you could get a purchase one too, but maybe I don't know if we think we talked about it on the other episodes. Maybe go back. But he wanted to not be sitting at like the typical purchase loan of like 65 or 70% loan to value, whereas and based on the purchase price, why not base it on the actual value? So I know in Tom's case, he put some did a tenant turnover, light rental,
Yeah.
pushed the value up, and then did the refinance to pull out more than what he would have got from just a purchase loan, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I did. And that was the benefit of doing it that way. And also just registering one mortgage versus two, trying to refi it out after the purchase saved me some points there.
Yeah. And with my story, I used my home equity line of credit and I bought one house with my first one. I figured because back then I didn't have a podcast like this. And so I didn't know how lending worked or anything, but I'm like, I'll go figure it out and then I'll go. I don't know how that saying goes, but I dive in deep and then I'll figure it out later. Right.
Yeah.
But I did that. And then it got me into the first property and then I had the money to do the second and third, but I went into a refi right off the second and third and did three of them as three mortgages all at the same title company at the same time and got all my money back. And then I was like, all right, we got something here.
Yeah.
If I can keep using this money and collecting more properties, then yeah. And this is a good way to do it, right? Because then you'll have some collateral, some money to work with. And then, the American system, they want to lend you money. The leverage will be lower than the Canadian system. But if you can buy it at the right price or add value through doing something, then you can keep pulling your money out and reusing it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you did to start. And I mean, I think I asked you the last episode too, how many houses or properties you had, and you couldn't even give me an answer because you have so many.
Honestly, I should have. I'm gonna have this ready better next time we talk. I'm not sure, but the thing is, it comes and goes. Like we just, I think.
Yeah, you're always moving and shaking.
We're always moving and shaking. We have seven under reno, four for sale, and we sold a bunch already this year. So it's trying to figure this, it's always moving. It's a moving target.
Well, because you're transitioning to multifam now, right? Is that part of the plan, selling off more of the single and going multi?
Well, that's a good question. So it is and it isn't. So like right now I just got myself in a cash position. And part of it is whenever you go to buy, if you want to go buy like a $10 million multifamily building, you need a lot of money to just put down as deposits off the start or money that goes hard or money that just, shows that you're serious about this building, even if you have it so that it's soft and you can still pull it back. But if they want to accept your contract, they want you to just throw out, $100,000, $200,000 in at the title company just to show that you're serious, that you actually can pull this stuff off. So that was part of it. For saying like getting out of the single family stuff, it's hard. I love both things, and I think that it's a lot easier to do the big multi, as crazy as that sounds. But it is so much faster and easier in the single family or smaller stuff.
Right.
But you generate, wealth and scalability. It's just it it it's so much more powerful. Like the amount of time it takes me to analyze two duplexes, I could buy a 70 unit building, right?
Right.
On analysis time, right? So I don't know. I love them both.
I like the idea of diversifying too. Like I'd rather not have all my eggs in one basket too. So I agree with that.
Yeah. But mentioning that, like I am invested in, I don't think it's seven different states right now. But the thing about that is you still have to have a good chunk in each place. If you just buy one house everywhere, you're not important to anyone.
Yeah.
Having seven different states with one house, it'd be better to have seven in one place. The property manager, you're a bigger deal. You call, they're more concerned about you. It just all of it.
I can vouch for that, man. Like I know if I had seven more properties in my state, then my property manager would answer his phone a lot quicker.
Well, and also you have a little bit of leverage. Like you're like, you can go to the property manager and go, hey, you know, you're charging me 10. Maybe I bring in, if I hit the 10 mark, then we can move it down to 9 or 8. If it's 8, you can move it down to 7. If you bring some more properties in, right? So you're
making
a bigger deal. Anyway, we're kind of off topic, but this is how a lot of people grow. And that's why I wanted to have you on here to talk about this stuff. A lot of people have a lot of money in their house, and it is the easiest way to invest. And if you're going to go and do this and be somebody's joint venture, for instance, just make sure that in this plan, there is some sort of refinance, some sort of sale, because when you're using home equity lines of credit to buy property, it should have an exit. It shouldn't be forever. Even if you're doing this and it makes sense to do a 3-year hold, a 5-year hold with someone's syndication, that's still okay, in my opinion. But you need to understand that you can run the numbers on it, make sure this is going to work, and try to predict what the interest rates are going to work. Because at least with my home equity line of credit, it does vary. It does move with the market. Is that typical, or am I getting screwed?
The line of credit vary with the market?
Yeah. So my home equity line of credit, the rate does change as the market.
Oh, yeah. The rate is
as the Bank of Canada rate changes.
Exactly. It's like a variable rate. It fluctuates with the Bank of Canada up and down as they set the prime rate. So today, as of recording, it's 7.2% for the prime rate, and that's set by the Bank of Canada and banks. And once they make an update, if they reduce that by, say, 0.25, then you'll have that reduction and you'll see that in your line of credit as well, which is reflected on the next month's statement. So as you see rate cuts happen, you'll see your actual interest on your line of credit decrease as well, which will be nice.
Yep. Awesome. And I'm going to mention that we're recording this March 21st, because anytime anyone throws out a rate, they're like,
yeah, exactly.
They're like, how long ago did he record this? Oh, March 21st, 2024. Sometimes they're like, is this recent?
Holy crap, rates are so high, man. That's what they're going to say 2 years from now.
Hopefully. Yeah. Maybe.
I hope. Yeah. They all hope.
Awesome. Well, Tom, like always, appreciate you coming on the show. Do you want to mention some of your, because I was on your podcast, do you want to mention your podcast, some of your spots they can find you?
Yeah, you can find us everywhere on any podcast platform, Canadian Mortgage Guide. So we talk about all of these cool tips and tricks and tactics on how to actually get the best mortgage here in Canada. And we also talk about any market updates and real estate news as well. That's on our YouTube channel too. So everywhere, Canadian Mortgage Guide.
That's awesome. And so it's for everyone. It's not like for mortgage brokers or something. It's for everyone.
Yeah. And I guess I'll toss my email, or we'll put the email in the show notes.
Yeah, it works too. Yeah, cool. Send me an email and I'll throw it in.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, Tom, like always, pleasure talking to you, and a ton of information. And I think anyone who is even thinking about this theory, maybe they just even just send you an email. Or maybe you don't, at least you can give them some straight advice if they think that they're in a spot they could do this or not do this, but, or even send me an email
honestly, if it's send me an email, if it's a no, we'll let you know within 10 minutes of a phone call and say, hey, might not be doable right now, but here's what you can do to get there. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I'm like, maybe I'm signing him up for something.
No, all good.
But yeah, no, like, yeah. So reach out to him, you know, just even his experience. And, you know, with all this, sometimes there's little bumps, like just moving money back and forth to the US. And so talk to somebody like myself or Tom, who's dealt with lines of credit in Canada for investing in the United States. And, anyway, tons of tips. I think we covered a lot of it. And, I think that, I think maybe it's just another thing that people are more comfortable with Canadian lending, and it might be a good way to make a not such a leap into the US in a smaller step if you're coming with your own financing.
Absolutely. Well, appreciate it, Glenn. Thanks for having me back on.
Thanks for coming, Tom.
That was a nice video. Bye.